Hello, everyone. Today is March 9th, 2017. Welcome to the House Committee on Human Services and Housing. I'm going to mix up the order a little bit since we've got two legislators here to testify, and I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2010. Cassie, could you read us the summary, please?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2010 establishes the Task Force on Addressing Racial Disparities in Homeownership to compile data concerning levels of home ownership among people of color in Oregon. The bill directs the task force to identify barriers to home ownership and access to mortgage loans, investigate practices and procedures for approving mortgage loan applications, identify practices and procedures that deliberately discriminate against people of color, and recommend solutions. The bill specifies rules of operation for the task force and declares an emergency effective on passage, and the task force would sunset December 31st, 2018.
Great. Madam Speaker, would
Good
you
morning.
Like to start?
Representative. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Tina Kotek, State Representative, House District 44, North and Northeast Portland, Speaker of the House. It's my weekly visit to the committee. It's nice to see you all. I'm here to testify in support of House Bill 2010, and also one of our other chief co-sponsors, Representative Hack, apologizes for not being here. She had an out-of-building meeting this morning, but is obviously a very supportive member of our bill here. So my testimony should come on OLIS soon. There are some graphs in there that I won't go into detail, but they are. I hope you look at them. It shows specific details of the disparities in home ownership along race and ethnic lines here in the state of Oregon. For most families in Oregon and across the country, home ownership is one of the most significant wealth-building opportunities, providing economic stability that can be passed down through generations. However, our home ownership rates are not equal across racial lines in our state. The disparities are stark and rooted in historic injustices that have festered for too long. In 2015, 67% of non-Hispanic white households owned their homes, compared to 46% of Native American and Alaska Native households, 37% of Latino households, 34% of black households, and 24% of Native Hawaiian and Pacific Islander households. That's pretty stark, colleagues. And like I said, there's graphs in my testimony. Families of color have lower home ownership rates for a range of reasons. The legacy of harmful policies such as redlining, discriminatory lending practices, and more recently, the destructive and ongoing impacts of the housing collapse and the Great Recession. In order to ensure equal opportunity for all Oregonians, we must confront these racial disparities in home ownership. Furthermore, and why I'm supportive of this bill, particularly this session, in order to truly solve our Oregon housing crisis, we must address the full spectrum of housing issues, including ways to increase home ownership. This is a very simple bill. It creates a task force to make recommendations to the legislature. And it's really important because by removing barriers for Oregonians of color to purchasing homes, we will release pressure on the rental market as more families are able to buy homes. And second, increasing home ownership among families of color will help close the racial wealth gap that threatens our values as Oregonians, as well as our long-term economic prosperity. And with that, I encourage you to read my entire testimony, but I know you have a busy morning, so I will conclude there. And thank you, and I hope you support House Bill 2010.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Kenny Geyer and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Janelle Bynum, and I represent House District 51, East Portland, Damascus, Gresham, Boring, North Clackamas, and Happy Valley. Thank you so much for hearing my testimony today on HB 2010. So Oregon's dark early history of black exclusion laws, originally enshrined in our state constitution, did what it was supposed to do. It succeeded in discouraging black pioneers and ensured that Oregon was settled overwhelmingly by white settlers. And this is a legacy that continues, that endures generations later. So, from Speaker Kotek, we just heard some incredibly stark numbers. And in addition to those, I wanted to highlight that in 2017, it was reported that even a two-parent family of color's wealth is half of that of a single-parent white family's. And that's half. That's stark. Even when comparing exclusively black families, a disparity still exists in Oregon. A 2014 report by Portland State and the Coalition of Communities of Color found that the average African-American family's earnings in Oregon are lower than their national counterparts. And then just yesterday, the Oregonian reported that between 2012 and 2014, Portland's black population has declined by nearly 800 residents, even with the city's overall population experiencing rapid growth. So we kind of have to ask ourselves, what could be the cause of this decline? One clue we can look at is that in Multnomah County, just 32% of African Americans own homes, as opposed to a rate of 45% nationally. So to kind of conclude it, Oregon's families of color need barriers to home ownership, both known and unknown, eliminated. Families need the tools to develop and pass on generational wealth accrued over one's life. And I think that now is the time to identify the barriers, continue the fight to make economic gains more equitable for all Oregon families. So, in essence, this is the purpose of HB 2010, and I hope that you'll support the important work that it aims to tackle. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions from the committee? I think you've been very clear and compelling, so thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
You're leaving lots of time for other home ownership bills.
Right. So have a great morning, folks.
Thank you. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2010. I'm going to go back to the work session that we didn't have time for last time. It's a little bit of a complicated one, so I'd like to ask my experienced vice chair to help walk us through this.
Do you want me to read?
Actually, that's a good idea, and let me officially open the work session on House Bill 2216.
All right. Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2216 establishes specified rights for foster children and directs DHS, Department of Human Services, to adopt rules establishing the Oregon Foster Children Sibling Bill of Rights. The bill directs DHS to review the rules periodically and promote participation of current and former foster children in developing the rules. We last heard testimony on this bill on February 9th. On that day, we also adopted the Dash 2 amendments. February 16th, we adopted the Dash 2 amendments, but we did not move the bill. Today, we have the Dash 4 and Dash 5 amendments. The Dash 4 amendments clarify the terms for foster child and sibling, expands the essential rights of siblings who are foster children to include documentation of rights, explanation of contact, denying contact with siblings, applicability of rights, and request for the foster child's attorney advocate for contact and visits with siblings. The Dash 5 specifies that the bill shall not affect the application of the Indian Child Welfare Act. We have both the fiscals and the revenue statements for both. The fiscals are no fiscal or indeterminate at this point, and there is no revenue impact.
Okay, so Madam Chair, I move the rules be suspended for the purpose of reconsidering the vote on House Bill 2216 for the Dash 2 amendments.
Okay, Rep. Olson recommends that the rules be suspended for the purpose of reconsidering the vote on House Bill 2216-2 amendment. The motion is not debatable. Is there any objection to the motion? If not, then the rules are suspended.
Okay, Madam Chair, I move we reconsider the vote by which the Dash 2 amendments dated 2/13/17 were adopted.
Rep. Olson moves to reconsider the vote by which the committee adopted the Dash 2 amendments dated 2/13/17. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none, is there any objection to the motion? If the motion carries and the measure is once again before the committee, if not, the motion carries and the measure is once again before the committee in its original form.
So, Madam Chair, I move that the Dash 4 amendments be placed into this House bill.
Okay, Rep. Olson moves to adopt the Dash 4 amendment stated 2/27/17. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair, I'm looking on OLIS and I see that there are two sets of Dash 4s with different dates. Can anyone clarify that? Mm-hmm. There's a date 3/7/4 and a date 3/9 as far as so it's uploaded
twice. Are they
twice.
Exactly the same text?
I just saw that on my phone, so okay. I can't quite.
So we did upload them to OLIS for the work session on the 7th, so maybe that's where...
They often get reposted, but they're usually the same, so let's just make sure.
Just wanted to make sure.
Yeah. The ones that we're voting on are the ones dated 2/27/17.
So one of them says 2/27. I can only move so fast on my phone. Okay, they are both dated that, 2/27.
They are?
Yes.
And they're the same. Okay. Thank you for being so thorough, former Vice Chair Stark. Okay, any further discussion on that? Seeing none, is there any objection to the motion? If not, the motion carries and the amendments are adopted.
Madam Chair, I also move to adopt the Dash 5 amendments dated 3/8/17.
Rep also moves to adopt the Dash 5 amendments dated 3/8/17. Is there any discussion? Okay. Seeing none, is there any objection to the motion? Seeing none, the amendments are adopted.
And finally, Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2216 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation as adopted.
Rep also moves House Bill 2216 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? All right. If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Borsig?
Yes.
Representative Meek?
Yes.
Representative Nierman?
Aye.
Representative Noble?
Aye.
Representative Peluso?
Aye.
Representative Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Olson?
yes.
Vice Chair Sanchez?
Aye.
Chair
Hennigan? Yes. Okay, the motion carries. The bill is sent to the floor. Representative Peluso, would you please carry the bill on the floor?
Yes, please.
Thank you. Okay, great. With that, I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2216, opening a public hearing on House Bill 2570. Delighted to have Representative Witt here, second year in a row. Yeah, great. And Representative Gomberg, Representative Wisnick. And Cassie, could you please read the bill?
This is trouble. This is...
Madam Chair, yes. Members of the committee,
absolutely.
House Bill 2570 directs Oregon Housing and Community Services to establish the Affordable Home Ownership Grant Program to provide grants to eligible nonprofit organizations with home ownership programs, providing opportunities to persons in low-income households throughout the state. The bill specifies the purpose of the grant to be for purchase of or leverage loan for new homes, rehabilitation of homes, or purchase of manufactured homes for first-time low-income homeowners or for the nonprofit. The bill defines the minimum rule for grant qualification to have an established and operating affordable home ownership program. The bill specifies the application process for nonprofit organizations applying to participate in the Affordable Home Ownership Grant Program and specifies the requirements for repayment of the grant. The bill requires the nonprofit organization to report annually to OHCS on the status and use of grant funds, including information on activities, loans, number of homes or manufactured homes purchased, constructed, or rehabilitated, the amount of administrative expenses, and demographic data on the recipients. The bill specifies the amounts of loans purchased or leveraged shall not constitute a debt or lending credit of the state, and requires that the nonprofit organization to create and administer a revolving fund for recipients to purchase, construct, or rehabilitate a home or manufactured home. The bill establishes in the state treasury the Affordable Home Ownership Grant Program Fund, separate from the general fund, and appropriates $25 million from the general fund to the Affordable Home Ownership Grant Program beginning July 1st, 2017.
Thank you, Cassie. Representative Witt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, Brad Witt, House District 31, appearing before you this morning in support of House Bill 2570, a bill that is intended to create statewide affordable home ownership grants for low and moderate income Oregonians. I think most of us are aware of the housing shortage that exists across our state. For many lower income people, this shortage is a veritable crisis. To that point, and I would like to quote Jim Tierney, who is the former executive director of the community action team in St. Helens, and he's here in the audience today. And before he gets to say it, I'm going to steal his thunder. So.
Nice.
Quote, the incomes of the bottom 40% of American households have been dropping for 40 years. The private market has been unable to adjust housing costs to meet the needs of this challenged demographic. End of quote. House Bill 2570 is aimed exactly at this income group and their housing crisis. It attempts to make home ownership affordable for first-time single-family home buyers by directing the Oregon Housing Community Services Department to establish an affordable home ownership grants program. To explain how the grants will be formed, how the money may be dispersed, and what that money will be used for, I'm going to rely on Shannon Villauer, who is the executive director of Habitat for Humanity Oregon. She will be following our panel. With that, I'd like to, with your permission, turn it over to my two colleagues.
Thank you, Representative.
Good morning, Madam Chair and honorable colleagues. For the record, I'm Gene Wisnett, State Representative, House District 53. Representative Witt discussed this bill with me early, and the three of us on this panel have worked together on affordable housing issues, mainly with Habitat for Humanity. But I think the good Representative Witt did a good job explaining the bill. I think this does address affordable housing. The people that we're focusing on here, if they lose their house, then they're back in the social services and puts more burden on society. And it's home ownership is so important to the American way of life, to have a home. It brings families together. It gives you stability. It gives you pride. And I think this is a great bill. I'm glad that Representative Witt introduced it and asked me to join him and Representative Gomberg on it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative.
Well, thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. David Gomberg from House District 10 on the Central Oregon Coast. I find myself in that awkward position where everything's been said, but not everybody has had a chance to say it. So let me try and add a different perspective on this worthy and worthwhile piece of legislation. And that is that in my district, as you drive up and down the coast, you're going to see help wanted signs in front of businesses everywhere. These are small businesses. They're a core part of our coastal economy. And I think not unlike many of your districts, particularly in the rural part of Oregon. And what's the problem? Well, there's several problems, but a critical issue at the top of the list of challenges is that the people that we want to work at the coast can't afford to live at the coast. And that's where legislation like this becomes critically important, not only for the home buyer. And I don't want to de-emphasize the importance and the value of owning a home and giving people opportunity for that life-changing turn point in their own lives. But I also want to put it into a larger context, is that having those people in our community and invested in properties has a broader impact on the economy and the community as those people stay, they work, they grow, they invest, and the community at large moves forward in addition to those new homeowners themselves moving forward. And that's the aspect I wanted to add to the conversation.
Thank you very much. Are there questions for this panel? Nope. All right.
Well, I guess, Madam Chair, I just got to say I really greatly appreciate all three of them coming up here and sharing this. I mean, this is a good stepping stone, and I just want to say, you guys, good for you guys.
Yep.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair.
Thank you. Yes, Representative Nierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Hey, before you go, I have a question. How does the money get into the fund in the first place?
Madam Chair, Representative Nierman, you're going to hear more details on this, but what happens, we're going to be asking for an allocation probably in the neighborhood of $25 million that will go to the Oregon Housing Community Development Department. And that money then will be sent out to qualified nonprofit housing advocacy groups will then formulate a revolving fund. That revolving fund then will go to qualified bidders or borrowers, excuse me. And qualified means that they will go through an education process. What does it take to become a homeowner? You know, what are the economic demands? What are the upkeep demands for the housing? All of those, I think, key points for, that a first-time home buyer needs to know, understand, and be able to follow through on. Those who then are qualified will be loaned to, and the money can be used actually for in a couple of different ways. It can either be used in what we would probably consider would most likely consider to be a loan. So it could be a loan against building a new home. It could be a loan against maybe replacing manufactured housing. It could be a loan to rehab some existing housing. Or, alternatively, it could be an instance where the housing nonprofit advocacy group would go out and purchase the housing, which then would in turn be sold to either low or moderate income Oregon families, first-time home buyers, single-family first-time home buyers. So, but I suspect you're going to be getting a lot more detail than that cursory overview.
Good, thank you.
That's great. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you very much.
Okay, great. So, first up, we have Allison McIntosh, Jim Tierney, and Yasika Arevalo. Arevalo?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Chair Kenny Geyer, Vice Chair Olson, Vice Chair Sanchez, members of the committee, my name is Allison McIntosh, and I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Housing Alliance to express our strong support for House Bill 2570. As you all know and have heard me say, the Housing Alliance is a coalition of more than 80 organizations from all parts of the state concerned about making sure everybody has a safe place to call home. As you also have heard, across Oregon, home prices have increased rapidly over the last several years, and more families can no longer afford to purchase a home. We simply don't have enough affordable homes for sale to meet the need or demand. Affordable homeownership can be a powerful tool to help families achieve lasting stability in housing and remain in their communities. It's a powerful tool that provides opportunities for families and individuals to build assets and help address racial disparities in wealth, and it can create long-term stability for families. House Bill 2570, as you heard, is a revision of a concept that was originally brought forward in 2016. The concept is based on a successful model that's been working to sustainably increase homeownership development options in Minnesota for over 12 years. In 2016, the bill was structured in such a way that in practice, only Habitat for Humanity affiliates would be able to use the funding mechanism. And so together with Oregon Opportunity Network, the Oregon Housing Alliance convened a work group of homeownership partners, and we met to discuss, compromise, and finalize the details of the proposal you see before you today. And we are really thrilled to be back with a concept that would allow any nonprofit organization with experience developing affordable home ownership options to participate. I just want to say a few words about this bill and our intention before I turn it over to some real experts. House Bill 2570 would provide resources, as you heard, to Oregon Housing and Community Services and direct the agency to offer grants to develop more affordable home ownership options. The intent would be to serve a range of incomes and a range of geographies. The bill directs HCS to offer grants that would either serve families with a revolving loan fund model, the nonprofit organization, such as a Habitat for Humanity affiliate, would purchase or leverage loans made to qualifying families, and their loan repayments would repay the fund over time. The other second option would be to serve families with a capital construction revolving loan fund model. The capital would allow the nonprofit organization to build a home and then use the proceeds from the sale to a qualifying family to build another home, and so on and so forth. It is also the bill's intent to serve families with a range of incomes from very low at 30% of the area median income to 100% of the area median income. And ultimately, this program will help build new homes, replace manufactured homes, and to acquire and rehabilitate homes. It's our intent that some of any available resource would be directed both to serve families at the very low end of that income spectrum as well as the more moderate income. And we would really like the department to seek grantees that propose to serve a range of incomes using different models and serving a range of geographic areas. And we believe House Bill 2570 will have significant and positive benefits on our communities by helping to create more affordable home ownership options. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Chair Kenny Geyer, members of the committee. My name is Jim Tierney. I am here to ask for support of House Bill 2570. I want to thank Representative Witt for what I was able to cut out of what I was going to say. So I'm the immediate past executive director of Community Action Team. That's one of 17 locally based community action programs serving the entire state. For most of my 32 years, however, at Community Action Team, I was actually the director of community development, meaning housing and community facilities was my turf. I created the department at Community Action Team in response to a previous housing crisis. We began doing housing rehab, added weatherization, moved into multifamily development in the 90s, and began a sweat equity program in the same decade. We've added property management and maintenance and have preserved three multifamily projects since then. So we wind up finding ourselves having to be all things because we're pretty much the only player in the neighborhood. We all began working on the growing gap because, as Brad said, the income gap, as incomes have not kept up with the cost of housing. Our way of dealing with this is to, we have, like any other developer, we have to find land, then we have to option it. We have to make sure we do architecture to make sure how we're going to use it, develop a feasible plan. Push the idea through the local landing process, land use process everyone else has to, and only then can we ask agencies for support. That process is expensive, and it's really the limitations on the capital to do that pre-development that really keeps us from being more productive than we would be otherwise. To date, we've managed to do 400 housing and rental units. But because these projects take so long, literally 3 years is typically what runs through my mind, our average unit per year is only 14 units. So we find that the some way to move the thing forward is to help with that pre-development. HB 2570 will do that exactly. We believe that it will allow us to triple our productivity out of the box indefinitely. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
Good morning. My name is Jessica Arevalo, and I am the Cross-Cultural Community Outreach Coordinator for Pratt Ground. I am here today to testify on the House Bill 2570 and also to represent the 400 families that are currently in our interest list working really hard in order to become mortgage ready. And so the funds that are going to be provided through this bill will be directly assisting these families to be able to have houses available so that in the near future when they're ready to buy, there will actually be homes that they'll be able to afford and actually purchase in the community. 60% of the families are actually from communities of color. 15 come from the Latino community, 25% come from the Black and the African American community, 23% come from other minority groups such as Asians, Pacific Islanders, Native Americans, Middle Easterns, and other races. So many of these families are also experiencing really high rent increases at the moment, and that has motivated them to take the next step and to become mortgage ready. And so The majority of these families are also made up of females, head of households. They only have one income to count on in order for them to be able to purchase a home. And so once again, the funding that's going to be provided through this bill is going to be able to assist those families in order for there to be affordable homeownership opportunities available. I am here today to represent the voice of those females because I was once one of them. 3 years ago, I was able to purchase my home through Pratt Ground. It's a four-bedroom home in the East Portland area. I was able to buy it for $150,000. At the moment, there's no more houses available, even through our program, at that price range. And so right now, families are having to become mortgage-ready for a mortgage of at least $200,000 or even more. And even at that price point, there aren't any homes available. So we need this funding in order for us to be able to provide more permanently affordable, forever affordable homes for families that are low to moderate income, and to also close the minority homeownership gap. So please consider it, and thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Any questions for this panel? Yes, Representative.
Thanks. So, Ms. McIntosh, you mentioned that program in Minnesota, and I think you said it's been going for 12 years. So apparently they're doing it sustainably, that the money's turning over to come back in. Is that the intention of this program, too?
Chair Kenny-Geyer, Representative Nierman, yes, it is absolutely the intention of this bill. On the next panel is Shannon Vilhauer from Habitat for Humanity, and she's the resident expert in the Minnesota Good. Program. So I'll Good. Let her speak to that. But
Thanks.
Absolutely, that is the intention that this would continue.
Okay, thank you. So with that, Shannon Vilhauer, yeah. Stacey Daniel, and Jennifer Hopkins.
Good morning. My name is Jennifer Hopkins, and I am a single mom of three boys, and I am a homeowner. I live out in the Portland area, right on the border of Gresham. About 4 years ago, I was selected by Habitat for Humanity to partner with them in their homeownership program. Prior to that, I had moved around a lot. My kids had to change schools a lot. They had trouble making friends. They really didn't have a connection with the community. And I had to work a lot to afford childcare and to afford the increased rents and the reason we had to keep moving. I ended up living with my mom, and the four of us shared one bedroom, all squished in there. The kids couldn't have friends over. It was very difficult. So when I began my partnership with Habitat 4 years ago, our lives changed. We moved into our house a little over 3 years ago, and my kids are all on the TAG program at school. My oldest received the Presidential Award of Academic Excellence last year and is now a middle school at Centennial and receiving a 4.0. But for that, my kids didn't really care about school, and I feel that the stability of being in our own home and giving back to our community has really helped them excel. My youngest is on the autism spectrum, and he even has graduated speech earlier this school year. Mm-hmm. And before, he just struggled, and it's like he's a whole new person. I take pride in having my own home. I'm on the HOA. I'm actually the president right now of our HOA for our neighborhood. We put in a new community playground at the end of our cul-de-sac, and we worked really hard to get that in there. I love my neighbors, and I don't take for granted, you know, I get to go out and work in my yard, and we get to decorate for holidays. My kids have made friends that I think they'll have for forever. And I just really enjoy giving back to my community and having that pride of being a homeowner and feeling like I belong somewhere. I helped our school start a PTA this last year. I volunteer there whenever I can. And I also am the den leader for my boys' Cub Scout pack. We just feel like we finally are in a community where we belong, and having that home, you know, started it all. I just want to say that, you know, home ownership is a beautiful thing, and without Habitat for Humanity, I wouldn't be where I am today. So thank you.
Thank you very much. It's a great story.
Good morning, Chair Kenny-Geyer and Vice Chair Sanchez and Olson and members of the committee. Thank you for allowing me to testify on behalf of HB 2570. My name is Stacey Daniel. I work at NeighborWorks Umpqua in southern Oregon. We serve southern and southwestern Oregon, doing housing and community and economic development. As I'm sure many of you are aware, much of rural Oregon is still struggling. Yesterday, I met with a state of Oregon economist in Coos County. She spoke of flat economic growth and a shortage of housing, even in the upper price ranges. She spoke of how difficult it was to find her own house when she moved to Coos County and of the poor condition of the houses that existed. It's hard to find a home to buy in many rural counties. In Coos County, like Douglas, Curry, Josephine, and many other Oregon counties, construction of new single-family homes has lagged behind the need. We at NeighborWorks Umpqua believe in rural Oregon. We believe that by building modest homes, utilizing money from this fund, we can create vitally needed construction jobs and help to stimulate the housing market. We hope to use our expertise to fill a niche in single-family construction abandoned by the market and in the process stimulate other construction activity. Estimates range in how many homes are removed from the market each year due to age and deterioration. It could be as low as 0.5%, and it could be as high as 8%. Using 1% as a conservative estimate, my example counties have been at less than replacement rates since at least 2000, the last year I investigated. This means we are not supplying enough new construction for the existing population, even without allowing for growth. This is adding to the shortage of housing in rural Oregon. This affects every rural community as they try to attract and keep doctors, nurses, teachers, and other critical community members. We hear in all kinds of Oregon communities stories of teachers leaving mid-year due to an inability to find housing and of an inability from medical centers to be able to find employees. In our IDA program at NeighborWorks Umpqua, we have buyers who are qualified to buy homes and have down payments, and they can't find a home that's in good enough repair to buy. While NeighborWorks Umpqua hopes to build modest homes if we were to get this funding, we believe that by creating economic stimulus through our activities, we will help salt the market and encourage new development. The National Association of Homebuyers released a paper in 2015 on the economic impact of building 100 single-family homes. In Douglas County, in Douglas County, 100 homes could mean $18 million in income, stimulating local commerce and creating as many as 250 jobs. This is achievable economic development. In the one pager I presented, which hopefully you have, you can see the loss of construction jobs in Douglas, Coos, and Curry counties. Bringing back these jobs and the skilled labor they represent is important to the future of our communities. I thank the members of the committee for their consideration of my testimony.
Thank you very much. Thank you for traveling this far.
Good morning, Chair Kenny Geyer, Vice Chair Sanchez, Vice Chair Olson, and members of the committee. My name is Shannon Billhauer. I'm the Executive Director of Habitat for Humanity of Oregon. I am so delighted to be here visiting with you this morning on House Bill 2570. As Allison mentioned earlier, there's a different proposal that we brought last year. I'm here to say this is such a better bill. The work group has been a great chance to really get to know my colleagues across the affordable homeownership development field. They are smart, hardworking, innovative, and super resourceful. That is how we do this work. So every dollar you provide for us to help us expand our capacity, we'll do it, and we'll put it to work right away. At present rates, the 30 Habitat for Humanity offices working locally across the state are on track to build and sell 150 homes per biennium. With access to this fund, we could build and sell 30 homes to hardworking Oregon families. We are great at helping to close the minority home ownership gap as well. For the Portland Metro affiliate, 9 out of 10 homes that they build and sell are sold to buyers belonging to communities of color. We are building homes. 22 of our affiliates are located in rural Oregon communities, and just like everyone in the midst of this housing crisis, more and more qualified, hardworking Oregon families are coming to us for help, and we want to do more. So thank you so much for your consideration of this proposal. And I'm here to field technical questions as well.
Did you want to follow up on a technical question?
Yeah, can I follow up on a technical question?
Absolutely.
Thanks, Ms. Vilhauer. Thanks for your presentation, and thanks for your enthusiasm, too.
Yeah.
So, and thanks for your work. I assume that most of the people that get in these programs are probably not blue chip loan applicants, and that's okay, and I'm okay with that, and I get that. But so how do you evaluate these loans? How do you split the difference between providing an opportunity to someone and keeping the program sustainable? So if you could talk on that.
That is a great question that I'm happy to answer. So for example, I can best speak to Habitat for Humanity. We have a really careful home buyer selection process, and we partner with housing centers statewide to provide top tier financial management education to home buyers. Because we partner and the families put in sweat equity, we work together for typically 12 months. So they're helping to build their home, they're taking financial education courses, and we do some training on other things like starting a homeowners association or having your first pet, which can be a thing when you go from always renting to being a homeowner, for example. We're happy to report that our mortgage repayment rate is 98%. So that exceeds the repayment rate for the private lending market at all income levels.
Thank you.
Great question, great answer. Any other questions?
If I could add, all of the people that we sell our houses to are qualifying for conventional or FHA mortgages or some USDA mortgages on the market. So, they are well-qualified applicants.
Good. So that's the rub then. That's the trick then.
Can I follow up on that, though? I think you might deal with a higher income level because I think Habitat goes up to 30%. Is that correct? And Umpqua may go higher than that.
So we are serving 30 to 60% of the area, but our average home buyer income served statewide is 39%, or, for example, $22,000 a year in earnings for a four-person household in the Willamette Valley.
And our homeowners go up to 80%, and typically it is 50 to 80%. It's pretty hard because the area median income in Douglas County and many of the rural counties is very low. So it's very hard to get homeowners down in the lowest levels.
Yeah. Thank you. Sanchez.
Vice Chair
Sanchez.
Thank you. So I'm always thinking sort of further down the line, what could possibly go wrong? In your training and your classes and things, because I don't know a whole lot about that piece of it, are there aspects of just training around fraud and follow-up if somebody gets into a problem? I can see, you know, the potential for folks to sort of take advantage of a first-time home buyer. I've seen that happen out in the world, and folks can, you know, end up in a situation where they might be struggling. And you know, you see it. I get letters all the time. I want to buy your house.
Sure. And I think maybe both of us would like to respond. Vice Chair Sanchez, that's a great question. So we have really two ways of helping to prevent that from happening with Habitat for Humanity. One is the excellent home buyer education. And then second, the homes that we sell appraise for more than home buyers of that income can afford. So we have a first mortgage that's set so that it falls within typically 28% of the family's household income when they purchase the home. There's a silent second on the home. That's the difference between the appraisal value and that first mortgage, which automatically precludes predatory lending from being able to work. So that's a pretty handy mechanism.
And all of our home buyers complete home buyer education, so they're required to complete 8 hours. In addition, they take a financial capability course. And for our IDA participants, who are the majority of the people that we're helping to get into homes, we've worked with them for about 2 years. And once someone comes to us, they know that they can come back to us at any time that they have questions. So it's an ongoing relationship.
Can you explain IDA to the community, please?
Individual Development Account.
So
it's a match savings account, and so they save up to $2,000 or up to $3,000, and we match it with up to $9,000 to help them get into their home.
That's great. Any other questions or comments? I just want to say, having watched the bill last year that Representative Witt brought, which I thought was a great bill, the committee thought was a great bill, we passed it out of the committee knowing that this was a really, really big need. But the fact that you've gotten around, and I think the request was $20 million just for Habitat, as I recall. So the fact that you've expanded this so that you can fit a greater number of models and a greater number of income ranges up to 100%, I think is a great tribute to the work that Representative Witt and all of you have done in the last year. I'm only sorry that it's only $25 million to spread among more. I recognize in the fiscally restrained environment, that would mean that you would, you know, presumably get a lot less than you came in seeking last year, because it would be spread among a greater number of groups. And so that would be my only complaint about the bill, is that you're aiming lower than I would have liked to have seen. But I really appreciate all the collaboration that you've done and variety. I see Peter Hanley in the – you didn't want to testify?
Well, I'm a bad cleanup.
Okay. So, yes, no one else has signed up to testify. So if anyone else would like to come.
So, Madam Chair, just really quick.
Yep.
I'd like to know what Jennifer Senn's ages are.
So, eight, 10, and 13.
Oh, boy. Okay.
So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yes.
We'll add Peter Hanley.
Good morning, Chair Kenny Geyer, members of the committee. My name is Peter Hanley. I'm executive director, of CASA of Oregon, and I submitted testimony through OLIS, but there are a couple things I just wanted to highlight. One of the things about this bill is it would also help leverage federal funds through the U.S. Treasury CDFI account. And there's a number of home ownership providers that are additionally CDFIs that would likely participate in this. NEDCO out of Eugene, Portland Housing Center, Network for Oregon Affordable Housing, or NOAA, Willamette Neighborhood Housing and Community Housing Fund out of Washington County. I think the important thing about this is, besides it serving a broader area, a broader category of nonprofits and other lenders, is that it will particularly get into the rural areas, I think, a lot more, as well as serving a much more diverse population. One of our programs is manufactured housing replacement, and it's really hard to find the funds, to find the lenders to do that. And most of these folks that want to replace their mobile homes can probably only afford maybe $100 or $200 loan payment. And so this fund could help us establish that amount to loan to those folks, and hopefully we'll be able to put together some other subsidies as well. It also pairs well with self-help programs, which Jim mentioned, and there's a number of other organizations, NeighborWorks Umpqua and others that do a self-help or a sweat equity program. I think I'll just stop there because I know you've got a busy schedule today.
Okay, great.
Thanks.
Thank you so much. All right. With that, I'm going to close the hearing on House Bill 2570. Thank you, Representative Witt, for staying through the whole thing. And I'm going to open an informational meeting on the mortgage interest deduction and invite Christine Broniak, economist with Legislative Revenue Office. So we're going to have a brief overview of mortgage interest deduction, how it works to date, before we open up the public hearing.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Christine Broniak with the Legislative Revenue Office. You have an OLIS document that goes with this presentation, and so I'm here today to talk a little bit about the deduction for the home mortgage interest. This is available to taxpayers who pay interest on a home in a given year, and taxpayers can take advantage of the deduction by choosing to itemize their deductions on the federal Schedule A form. And then they forego that standard deduction. It's possible to only itemize deductions in Oregon, but not at the federal level. And this situation would be fairly common, as the Oregon standard deduction is quite a bit lower than the federal standard deduction. So there could be taxpayers who itemize it in Oregon, but not at the federal level. The federal standard deduction is $6,300 compared to $2,100 for a single taxpayer, and twice that for joint taxpayers. If itemized deductions exceed this amount, then taxpayers will itemize instead of taking the standard deduction. The itemized deductions are somewhat limited by income. The home mortgage interest deductions are part of the subset of itemized deductions that are limited. So the phase out starts at $259,400 in AGI for single filers and $311,300 for married filers, and that's indexed with inflation. And so certain itemized deductions, including home mortgage interest and property tax, are reduced by the percentage of income over the threshold. And so the smallest deduction a person could take would be as low as 20% of the amount paid in mortgage interest, given sufficiently high income. So it could be reduced down. And then Oregon also is connected to that reduction. So there is some aspect of an income limit for it, but still, as I will get to at the end of the presentation, I'll talk about the income limits or the income impacts a little bit more. So in the middle of the page, you can see the amount of home mortgage interest that was deducted. And as compared to the property tax deduction, this one was a lot more cyclical. And so basically, it would peak here pre-recession, and then it declined since then. It is projected to make a little bit of a rebound and go up in the coming years as the economy recovers.
Does that say $4 trillion?
That is $6 billion in the amount deducted.
Billion.
Yes. And that's the various types of home mortgage interest deductions that are taken by people in Oregon. That's just a history back to 2000. And so the revenue impact is estimated to be $880 million in the 2017-19 biennium. And so the revenue impacts have been declining since that peak in 2007, but they are also expected to increase. And so this just starts kind of at the peak of that previous graph, and you can see how the revenue impacts decline along with the home mortgage interest. You can see in recent years the amounts begun to level off and is projected to increase again as that market correction happened from the Great Recession. And so finally, here is a graphic that I pulled from the tax expenditure report. So credit would be due to the Department of Revenue for that one. But here you can see kind of how the home mortgage interest deduction affects the various types of income levels. And so 61% of the benefit is accruing to those who make above $84,300 in AGI. And the next largest amount is in the next lowest income bracket, so $47,600 to $84,300. And then there's a much smaller amount to anyone below that $47,000. So the bulk of the impact.
Answer a question. This is individual filers, not joint?
Madam Chair, this is kind of a agglomeration of both joint and individual filers.
Okay.
So, the bulk of the impacts is still with the higher income filers. This is despite the mechanisms to reduce it at the federal level. There are quite a few people who are, you know, above that $84,300 AGI cutoff, but you know, still lower than the cutoffs by which the federal deduction would start to be phased out. So with that, I can take any questions.
Do you have any questions? Great. Well, we can follow up with more questions. I'm curious about above 100,000 for individuals and above 200,000 for joint, if you can disaggregate that in the future.
Okay,
great. Any other questions? And this is all pegged to the federal. And so the drawdown or the weaning off for higher income levels, that happens at the federal level as well?
Madam Chair, that's correct, yeah. And so we're tied to it. It's a policy decision to be tied to the federal definitions of income and also deductions. It simplifies administration, but it's also a decision
that could be reversed potentially.
Okay. And then the mortgage limit right now is $1 million?
Madam Chair, that's correct, yes.
That is for joint fathers.
Yes. It's, and so the I noticed the bill today, House Bill 2006, I've estimated just from census data that about 5% of the home value is due to second homes. So the total revenue impact of that would be reduced by 5% if second homes were precluded from receiving the home mortgage interest.
Okay, and have you at this point looked at that bill to see what the savings would be given the stipulations of the bill?
Well, I would have to look at it again, but you could think of it as 5% of the revenue impact. So, you know, it would be 5% of that $450 million.
In addition to that, if you were to say 50% of the because we don't have the over 100,000 there, mm-hmm. and it's not broken down by joint, but just say it was 50% of the funds went to people with incomes of 100,000 more or 200,000 for joint filers. Let's just say that was the number. Presumably your savings would be half of the 880 million in addition to 5% for second homes. I'm doing big bulk numbers here.
Yes, if half of the impact did reside there, that would be true. Okay. I'm able to look at various income limits. I will follow up with you
okay,
on that.
Great. Yes, Representative Stark.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Kinnegar. Just want to double check as we go into this conversation here in a moment. In these numbers, is there anything that distinguishes the difference on a second home between a second home that's used as a rental versus a vacation home? Or are those all bulk together?
Madam Chair, Representative Stark, in some cases, the I believe the interest from a rental home could be considered a business expense, provided certain parameters are met. But I think when it's also possible that it would end up here, and we don't necessarily have information about the differences, you know, in the statistics at least that we get directly. But
thank you.
If I can follow up on your question, that was a great question. So if somebody has a second home and they have a mortgage on the second home, they are entitled to the mortgage through our tax system, regardless of whether it's a vacation home or a rental. Is that what you were saying?
Is that correct? I'm sure that, yeah, that could be the case.
Is that what you were asking?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, great, yes. Representative Nierman.
So thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks for your presentation. So other than states that have no income tax, are there any other states that have a split between the federal accounting on this and the state accounting that you know of?
Madam Chair, Representative Nierman, I haven't heard of it. I could look into that further for you, though.
Good. If you would, could you share that with us?
Sure.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. All right.
Thank you.
Close the informational hearing. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2006. And Cassie, could you please read a summary?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2006 modifies deductions for personal taxation by subtracting the mortgage interest deduction for a residence other than the taxpayer's primary residence and the mortgage interest deduction based on adjusted gross income thresholds from the taxpayer's itemized deductions. The bill requires Department of Revenue to adjust the limit on deductible interest based on the U.S. city average consumer price as published by the U.S. Department of Labor, and requires Department of Revenue to estimate the increase in personal income tax revenue and transfer the amount of the estimate to the Oregon Housing Fund for Home Ownership Assistance, General Housing, and Emergency Housing. The bill is effective the 91st day following signee day.
Okay, thank you. We have exactly 30 people signed up and an hour to go, so I would like everyone to keep it to 2 minutes. We're not going to do a formal 2 minute, but I will try to keep your eyes on me because I'll try to get you to wrap it up if you're hitting that 2 minute mark. So first on the list, we have Juan Carlos Ordonez, James Barda, and Mary King.
Keep time. Thank you.
Chair Kenny Geyer, members of the committee. I'm Juan Carlos Ordonez with the Oregon Center for Public Policy, and I'm here in support of House Bill 2006, which would enact a common sense reform of the Oregon mortgage interest deduction. The mortgage interest deduction is Oregon's biggest housing subsidy, and it is doing nothing to address the statewide housing crisis that we're facing. There are three key points that I'd like to highlight about the mortgage interest deduction. First, it's very costly. According to the tax expenditure report, it will cost our state $1.1 billion in the upcoming budget period. We heard just now that the figure is $880 million. Either way, it's far and away the state's biggest housing subsidy. The second point is that the mortgage interest deduction is inequitable in several ways. As we just heard, most of the tax benefits are going to those at the very top of the income ladder. 61% of the benefits are going to the top fifth. And there's structural reasons why this is the case that I'm happy to elaborate on. But the mortgage interest deduction is also inequitable because it exacerbates racial and ethnic disparities. People of color are less likely to own a home and tend to have lower incomes, and thus are much less likely to benefit from the mortgage interest deduction to even be able to claim it. The deduction is also inequitable to rural Oregonians. 9 out of 10 mortgage interest deduction dollars are flowing to urban counties. And all rural counties in Oregon get a disproportionately smaller share of mortgage interest deduction dollars relative to their share of all taxpayers in the state. So, in other words, the mortgage interest deduction is exacerbating the economic divide between rural and urban Oregon. The third point I'd like to make about the mortgage interest deduction, it's that it's ineffective, as just about any economist that you ask will tell you. The deduction is often justified on the grounds that it will promote homeownership, but it does nothing of the sort. And the reason is simple. Most of the tax benefits are going to those who do not need help affording a home. So they will buy a home anyway without the help of the mortgage interest deduction.
Carlos, if you can almost wrap it up.
Yeah, so in sum, the deduction is costly, inequitable, and ineffective, and we need to make it a vehicle for addressing our statewide housing crisis. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Kenny Geyer, members of the committee, my name is James Barta. I'm the legislative director for Children First for Oregon, and we're working to make Oregon the best place to be a kid, and housing, as you've already heard from other committee members and myself in previous testimony, housing is critical for children. Children who are in poverty face great, dangers to their health. It's now something that the American Pediatric Society is screening, suggesting doctors should screen for poverty now because it does have a profound effect on their health. And so it is right and good for the state of Oregon to be interested in getting people in housing. And we have this great program. Well, we have this program of great size, of apparently $880 million, that intends to do that, except, as Juan Carlos was just explaining, unfortunately, 61% of the funds of this program go to people who are going to buy a house anyway. It's a free ridership problem we're having. We're not helping the children. We're not helping the families who could benefit from the program. We're just subsidizing people who are already going to do it anyway, who already have the benefits of home ownership. And so that is the largest single issue that I just want to put in front of you, that this tax subsidy needs to change. And I firmly believe that House Bill 2006 is an excellent point where we can make those changes to make housing subsidies more effective for the families that need them. So this issue is on the children's agenda. It is supported by, of course, many of the organizations you've heard from and will be hearing from, and many others, they're of culturally significant underrepresented communities, and so we urge your support.
Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Mary King. I'm professor of economics emerita at Portland State University. Chair Kenny Geyer, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak. I speak today in support of HB 2006 on behalf of a number of Oregon economists and housing policy experts who've signed and written a letter outlining the reasons for our support. You have this in your exhibit, I believe, submitted by Daniel Hauser. Economists across the political spectrum agree that the mortgage interest deductions are bad policy. We've cited the range in the letter. Evidence shows that it does not affect home ownership rates. It diverts tax revenue that could be spent in ways that would make a real difference, and it subsidizes most, as you've heard, the highest income households who need it the least. To support the idea that it doesn't affect home ownership rates, Oregon has one of the largest mortgage interest deduction programs in the country, and yet today our home ownership rates are less than average. Home ownership rates are more driven by demographics and affordability, as well as competing needs, student debt, child care, that kind of thing. Nationally, the value of the federal mortgage interest deduction has varied widely over time with changes in the inflation rate and itemization rate, but home ownership rates have varied very little. The mortgage interest rate, as you've heard, diverts tax revenue, $880 million in Oregon, while our other housing initiatives operate on a shoestring but could accomplish far more had they more resources to work with. And last, home ownership, the mortgage interest deduction subsidizes the highest income households. You've heard 61% of the benefits in Oregon go to the top fifth of taxpayers because it's only available if you itemize deductions. Nationally, 1 in 17 households with income less than $25,000 itemize deductions, but 19 of 20 households with incomes over $200,000. That's why the proposed reform in Oregon, by placing the limits where they do, eliminating the mortgage interest subsidy as high as it is, would affect just the top 5% of taxpayers in Oregon. George W. Bush convened an advisory panel on federal tax reform in 2005, which recommended scrapping the federal mortgage interest deduction and replacing it with a much smaller tax credit geared to low and middle income households. And they pointed out again that the mortgage interest deduction subsidizes luxury and vacation homes, pushing up housing prices in the top third of the market and also increasing indebtedness. So in short, the mortgage interest deduction is bad policy, ineffective, inequitable, and worst of all, in these times, a missed opportunity to focus on housing policy capable of increasing home ownership and housing affordability. Thank you. I'm happy to answer questions if there's any time or by email or phone.
I have one quick question. Why would it be that Oregon has one of the highest mortgage interest deductions in the nation? Is it because our income tax is so high?
I don't know the history of it. I believe it's the benefit. I only noted that in the two strongest programs, we are out there at the edge. Okay. Do you know more about that, Juan Carlos?
My sense is that it is because Oregon has one of the highest tax brackets in the country.
Okay.
So not that the effective rate is the highest, but the highest tax bracket.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Okay, so next up, I'm going to give an opportunity right now for those against it. There are not as many as those against it. So if you'd like to come up now, Sean Gillians, John Chandler, and Matt Evans. We'll give you guys at least 3 minutes each. You're not as well represented here.
Don't do
that. Nice.
Oh, come on.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Sean Gillians representing the Oregon Association of Realtors today. No surprise in opposition to House Bill 2006. Madam Chair, I just wanted to put on the record first to start. We are concerned about the lack of a three-fifths majority on the bill. It's very clear the intent of this legislation is to raise revenue. In fact, it actually tells the Department of Revenue where to send that new revenue. So in a legal standing, I think we would have a pretty compelling case that the bill absolutely intends to raise new revenue. I think you heard a pretty good presentation about the mortgage interest deduction. A couple of things that I'd just highlight coming out of that. One, the $1 million figure that's thrown out federally, that is for joint filers. That's $500,000 limit on indebtedness for single filers. That's important because one of the largest growing segments of home buyers currently in our market is actually single women. So when you talk about the $1 million, let's keep into account that it's actually $500,000 for those filing. We looked at the numbers. You guys saw it, 65,000 Oregonians utilize the mortgage interest deduction. 148,000 of them are in that $47,000 to $84,000 bracket. I think, and I'm going to throw out a lot of numbers. I'm sorry, a little different than my usual testimony where we're just talking in theory, but I wanted to drill down and give you real life examples. A lot has been made about the quote 10 states that don't have the mortgage interest deduction but do have income taxes, and they have much higher rates of home ownership. Why can't we be more like them? Why can't we be more like West Virginia? Well, the median home value in West Virginia is $102,400. I would beg to offer that the reason they have a higher home ownership rate is that their home values are $100,000. The median home value in Oregon, just for reference, $317,000. So when we're talking about what you can and can't afford and why we utilize, to your question, Madam Chair, we have very high income tax rates. We have very high home ownership values. So when you look at what states utilize the mortgage interest deduction the most, you look on a federal sort of level, who utilizes it the most? West Virginia is at the very bottom. Of course they don't, because their home values are so low. What you do have is the entire West Coast utilizes it quite a bit. California is actually the highest utilization care of the home values that they have, but Washington, Oregon, Nevada, Arizona, not too far behind. National statistics show that more than 70% of homeowners utilize the mortgage interest deduction at some point during the life of their loan. 70% utilize it. So when we hear these sort of colloquies about, oh, it's only for the richest 1% or the 5% or the 20%, let's sort of dig into what those $84,000 a year people can actually purchase, what actually exists in Oregon. For $84,000 a year, if you had no other debts, so you don't have a car payment, you don't have student loan interest, you don't have credit card debt, you could afford a $365,000. I recognize, Madam Chair, that it's short, but quite honestly, this is such a huge issue that I really feel like, I just if you give me a little bit of courtesy to go a little bit long. $84,000 a year, $365,000 mortgage. If you add $1,000 of debt payments for student loans, car interest, you can afford a $283,000 a year mortgage. At $84,000 a year, the number that we have said, $102,000 a year, which this kicks in for a single filer, you can afford a $383,000 mortgage. The median home value in Portland is over $400,000 now. So you can't even afford the median home in Portland, and you would lose your mortgage interest deduction under this bill. I had several different legislative districts picked out. I'll just choose one in Portland. Median home sale price right now, $483,000 a year. You would have to make $120,000 a year to be able to afford that. You would get no mortgage interest deduction if you were single. That particular legislative district, 64% of all adults are single. In that. So effectively, you're cutting off a large swath who would no longer be able to take the mortgage interest deduction. Their average interest at historically low rates, 4.5%, would be $21,575. So even if they were fortunate enough to make $99,900 under this bill, $6,000 of interest would not be allowable for them. Last point, I promise, Madam Chair, on the 10 states, there are a couple that have similar home values to us. Most of them are not even remotely close. Ohio, Michigan, average home value, $128,000, $130,000. There are two, Massachusetts and New Jersey. New Jersey is relatively similar to ours in average home value. However, their income are 123% of the national average. We're currently 97%. Massachusetts actually has higher home values than us, but their income level is 121% of the national average. I would posit to you all that the fact that people have more income is the reason that they have higher home ownership rates there. I'm happy to take questions offline. You guys know that we're passionate about this issue. I feel like, unfortunately, there's been a lot of misinformation thrown out there. Happy to answer additional questions.
Good morning, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Matt Evans with Wagon Tire Consulting, here today representing the Taxpayer Association of Oregon. I'm going to dispense, because it's been so well done here, with most of my testimony, but I do want to give you a personal story. I know a lot of you believe that what you're doing with this bill is really whacking all the rich people that own vacation homes. My personal story is that when I was early on in my marriage, my mother-in-law became essentially unable to stay in the apartment she was in. So my wife and I found a very inexpensive one-bedroom condominium for her to live in that was close to our home so we could keep an eye on her in her declining years. How did we fund that condo? With a mortgage. Under this bill, if it had been in place at the time, we would not have been able to deduct the mortgage interest that we paid in order to help my mother-in-law have a better quality of life. We would not have been able to do the deal without the deductions that we received for doing so. So you have to remember, sometimes there are victims of legislation that we don't think about before we pass it. And in the case of House Bill 2006, I would have been, and my mother-in-law would have been, one of those victims. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee, John Chandler, Oregon Home Builders Association. I had a very difficult time preparing for this hearing because the issue is so frustrating. And I'm going to get on my soapbox for just a little bit with your indulgence. I've done this in this committee in previous sessions. Many of you have heard this, so I apologize for repetition. We have a housing crisis in this state. I don't think there's any question that people agree on that fundamental bumper sticker of a position. What we don't agree about is what to do about it. But there's, we also, I think, would agree that there's a lot of moving parts to that housing crisis. There are no silver bullets in our weaponry here. We cannot say if we just did X, the problem would go away. The fundamental issue, though, one of the fundamental issues, which doesn't affect near term, but mid and long, is we are underbuilding in this state relative to demand by about a 25% margin. We should be doing housing of all sorts, for sale, for rent, detached, attached, in town, out of town. We should be doing 25,000 round numbers, new housing units a year. Last year was the best year since the recession. We did just shy of 18,000, which means we underbuilt by 7,000. We've been doing that since the recession, which means we have a 100-some-odd thousand unit backlog of unmet supply. That's part of our problem. Now, that doesn't help folks today, but that does help going forward. And the issue is not limited to simply housing affordability. It's distribution, it's housing type, it's what sort of tenancy you have. And the tenancy issue is critical. Owned versus rented. Our home ownership rate in Oregon is one of the lower in the country for the reasons Mr. Gillian stated, but it also is a function of a number of other policy choices we have made that discourage home ownership and encourage rental by density and other things. I'm not trying here to revisit those issues, but to simply point out that we do have a relatively low home ownership rate, and that what that does then is diminish people's ability to build familial wealth. I went to a fascinating conversation, a presentation at the Oregon Opportunity Network a couple, 3 years ago, and I don't recall the economist's name or where he was from, but he was a professor of something fancy at an East Coast university who's obviously a genius by virtue of those characteristics alone, who's pointed out the wealth, family wealth disparity between white families and African-American families, and the white family's line was like this, and the African-American family's line was like that, very flat, big gap, growing, increasing time year over year, and the reason he pointed to, primary reason, was home ownership. Rates are lower for minority communities than they are for Anglo communities. That is a problem. All of these things mean that we need to have a much more nuanced view to this program than we tend to take. And the other soapbox issue, Madam Chair, and you've heard me say this before, and I'll continue saying it because I get fairly wound up about it, housing has not been a priority in this state, full stop. We talk about it, we run on it, we write people about it, we think it's a really good deal, but when it comes right down to it and we're making policy choices, we tend to undervalue it relative to the things we actually do. We don't fund it. The only new money in this state has come from the development community in the last 20 years. It came from the construction excise tax a couple years ago. It came from the document recording fee before that. The state general fund contribution is nil, continues to be nil. Usually you measure governmental interest in a topic by how much they pay for it. We don't have a good state enforcement mechanism for the laws that are already on the books. We have outsourced enforcement of housing policy to the private sector and to cities and counties who have limited ability and sometimes limited interest. And frankly, we have subordinated housing policy to a variety of other policies, environmental, land use, energy, and in this case, tax and revenue. I find it more than passingly ironic and frustrating, and I understand I'm over time, Madam Chair, but there is probably no larger issue for my industry, and I would submit for this committee, than to really find out what's going on with the housing markets in Oregon, and it's not something you can blithe our way past. It is ironic to me, and frankly, and I apologize for this, frustrating to me, that we are attempting to address the housing crisis by making it harder to buy and build housing. That makes no sense.
The first, and more importantly and more perniciously within this building, we're sending a signal, I think, at least that's what the signal I'm getting is, that housing is not as important as the budget problem.
So, John, if you can wrap up, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am.
And submit anything else you'd like to say for the record.
Second homes, very quickly. Think fishing cabins, not condos in Aspen. The average income of the second home recipient, these are national numbers, is the average income is $70,000. And 50% of the people claiming the second home deduction are people who bought house one while they're living in house two. They're transitional people. They're seniors moving into care homes. They're people that are like my colleague here.
Thank you.
Helping with their condos.
Thank you so much. And
I'm glad to take questions.
I couldn't agree more about the need to really prioritize housing and increase supply. So thank you so much. Any quick questions for this committee? Okay. All right, great. So next we have Ruth Atkins, Jeremiah Rigsby, and Britt Conroy. Is Britt Conroy here?
Okay, I'll go.
And if not, Stacey Daniel. Okay, go ahead, Ruth.
Good morning, Chair Kenny Geyer and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ruth Atkins. I'm with the Oregon Opportunity Network. My 2 minutes, I just wanted to review what House Bill 2006 does. So this bill does three things. First, it would cap the state's mortgage interest deduction, or MID, at $15,000 for a primary residence, well above the average that you just saw that folks actually take. It disallows the deduction of interest on mortgage for a second or vacation home. And third, it eliminates the state MID for higher income households over $200,000 adjusted gross income for a couple filing jointly. The vast majority of Oregon homeowners would not be affected by this proposal. All homeowners, except for those with the high incomes, would continue to be able to deduct up to $15,000 in mortgage interest on their state taxes. It would leave untouched the larger federal subsidy for all homeowners. It also would not impact landlords who take their deductions differently for a rental property than for a personal residence. House Bill 2006 would direct the revenue from changes to the MID to be invested in existing programs at Oregon and Housing and Community Services as follows. 50% to the Homeownership Assistance Account, which funds affordable home development, down payment assistance, home buyer education, and more. 25% to the General Housing Account for the development and preservation of affordable rental housing, and 25% to the Emergency Housing Account, which funds the EHA program for homelessness prevention. So together, House Bill 2006 will enable the state to invest in proven programs to address the continuum of desperate needs from homelessness to rental housing to home ownership, with an emphasis on first-time home ownership. It will give access to thousands more Oregonian families to the stability and prosperity of homeownership, which, after all, is the reported purpose of the MID. We're very excited to support this historic measure, which will be a game changer for our collective ability to ensure that every Oregonian has a safe, stable place to call home. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Chair Kenny Geyer, members of the committee, my name is Jeremiah Rigsby. I do government affairs for CARE Oregon. We provide Medicaid to about 215,000 Oregonians, but I am here today on behalf of the Human Services Coalition. I'm the co-chair of HISCO. We have a lot of principles that govern what we do and decide to endorse at HISCO, and two of those first principles are making sure that we are providing equal access to the programs that help low-income and vulnerable Oregonians, and we also want to make sure there's sustainable funding for those programs. There are a lot of numbers that have been thrown out already, a blizzard of numbers, and it's too early for those numbers, so I won't recite them. I just want to say that it appears as though the mortgage interest deduction, the subsidy, is the largest housing subsidy in the state, and it overwhelmingly is going to the top 20% of the state, which does not look like equity to us. Understand a lot of the concerns that were raised by the panel before us, but also want to make sure that we are recognizing, and I think there is consensus that we are in a housing emergency, and we do need to get money to programs that look like homeownership assistance, that look like emergency support for this homeless population. And if it's not this bill, we should find something different. Thank you. But we do support HB 2006.
Good morning, again, Chair Geyer and Vice Chairs Olson and Sanchez and members of the committee. My name is Stacey Daniel from Southern Oregon, and I was just asked to speak
behalf of this bill for rural Oregon. I will say that the median income in Douglas County ranges around $46,000. I was in my 50s before I was able to take the mortgage interest deduction. I bought my first house, actually, as a low-income parent through a program in Eugene. I've lived in Oregon all my life, and I've watched the price of housing get really high for people who are in the lower tiers of income, like the people in Douglas County making the median income for the area, and they're still paying $175,000 to $250,000 to get a livable two-bedroom or three-bedroom home. So I think that we really need to think about where we put the resources of the state, and the majority of the people in this state are not in those upper tiers of income. And I think that in order to address the needs of the people who both are and want to be homeowners, we need to really focus on putting our resources where it's the best use of the money. Thank you.
Okay, next up we have Kenny McLemore, Maggie Talmadge, and Commissioner Bill Hall.
Commissioner should go first.
Maggie, go.
Thank you. Hello, Chair Kenny Geyer and members of the committee. My name is Margaret Talmadge. I'm the Environmental Justice Manager at the Coalition of Communities of Color. We're here to express our support for HB 2006, which limits the state's mortgage interest deduction and directs those savings to better meet the needs of all Oregonians. Lawmakers should not continue to subsidize wealthy homeowners with this expensive tax giveaway, while families across the state are struggling to afford housing and find a safe place to live. The CCC is an alliance of 19 culturally specific and pan-immigrant refugee community-based organizations. We're working to advance racial justice by addressing socioeconomic disparities, institutional racism, and inequity of services in our communities. So we've heard many times today that disproportionately communities of color are not homeowners, are not benefiting from the mortgage interest deduction, and we're disproportionately impacted by the affordable housing crisis. Many of our families are facing rents that are 30, 50% of their incomes. So HB 2006, again, would limit the deduction on primary residences to a maximum of $15,000 annually and steps that number down based as incomes increase. The bill would also eliminate the mortgage interest deduction entirely on second homes and for wealthy households with incomes over $200,000 per year. And there's nothing wrong with providing support through the tax code, but lawmakers should not subsidize wealthy homeowners, and especially those that can afford a second home, while at the same time considering extreme and devastating cuts to critical programs that disproportionately impact communities of color. We're calling on you to make the right choice here, and an equitable one. We appreciate your time. Thank you.
My name is Kenny McLemore. I'm here today as just a private citizen. I'm not representing any organization. But I'm here because my whole career has been involved with affordable housing issues and spent a great deal of time trying to help people find safe, secure, and affordable housing. My very first job out of graduate school was coordinating a grant-funded program for first-time home buyers with disabilities. And, you know, the real education in that job, for every person that I talked to that might be eligible for our particular program, I talked to probably 100 people who were not eligible, would never be eligible, and were in very desperate straits. That was my real education. So it's that perspective I bring to you today. And I've also been a homeowner twice. So I understand that side of it as well. But today, in testimony that we've already heard, I understand that there are good arguments on all sides about this bill. But I did submit written remarks yesterday. And my own contribution, I just want to ask you to step back and look at the big picture on this. Understand that the federal environment of housing subsidies is the real superstructure that we're plugging into here. This bill would not change anything about the overall big picture distribution of federal housing subsidies. I hope that, and I trust that you see your jobs as not just promoting homeownership, which is a very good goal in and of itself, but through all of your work, you're trying to create more safe, secure, and affordable housing opportunities for all Oregonians, regardless of their station in life. And this bill could actually help to take a big step in that direction for Oregon.
Thank you.
I'll stop there. I do have information about it's a very recent study that shows how all state legislatures treat that mortgage introduction. I'd be happy to share that information with
Please
you.
Please do share that with us.
Okay. Thank helpful. You very much.
Thank you. Commissioner Hall.
Good morning, Chair Kenny Geyer and members of the committee. For the record, I am Bill Hall, currently serving my fourth term as a Lincoln County Commissioner, and today I'm asking for your support for HB 2006. You know, I talk about housing a lot, and often I ask people if they can identify the largest housing subsidy in the United States. Mostly, they guess the HUD Section 8 voucher. Very few realize that it is actually the mortgage interest deduction. Now, let me make a couple of things clear up front. My family is among the millions who benefit from it, and I absolutely support its continuation for a primary residence with a reasonable income standard. But I have to ask, if we were designing a housing subsidy from scratch today, would we really provide incentives for wealthier homeowners and vacation homes? Tourism, construction, and real estate sales are all important businesses along the coast, and I'm not surprised that these industries are not welcoming this idea. But I want to make a couple of more points. I believe that most of those who buy second homes can probably afford to do so even without the mortgage deduction. And second, as you've heard from me and others before, the coast is one of those places seeing serious impacts of large number of homes that are not primary residences. Some are in the vacation rental market, others are private family retreats. In Manzanita, in neighboring Tillamook County, the city manager says 75% of their homes are not primarily owner-occupied. In Lincoln City, it's 60% of the homes split almost evenly between vacation rentals and family retreats. The month-to-month vacancy rate for rentals in Lincoln County remains below 1%. It is no wonder to me that businesses of all types are reporting serious problems with employee recruitment and retention. Every single one of those business owners tell me that housing price and availability is their top barrier. Now, just one recent example from our own county government.
Make this your last example, please,
okay.
Commissioner Hall.
A behavioral health manager left us after 9 months, not because he didn't like the job or the community, but because he was tired of living in a campground because he couldn't find a decent, affordable place to live. I think this bill is common sense, and I urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Madam Chair, can I just ask the Commissioner one?
Yes, you may.
Do you think that the majority of your folks over there, having listened to what you just shared, the majority of your folks in Lincoln County would support this bill?
I really think so. You know, I think Oregon Center for Public Policy has some data that will show in Lincoln, and I believe the other coastal counties, that the majority of the benefit is not going to Lincoln County taxpayers. It's benefiting folks from other parts of the state who have rentals or retreats in the county.
Okay. Thanks, Bill.
Thank you.
Okay, next up, Annie Rose Shapiro, Rebecca Gladstone, and Jenny Lee.
Chair Kenny Geyer, Annie Rose is in traffic and has, if she's able to be moved to the end of the queue.
That would be fine. Thank Jess, you. Why don't you sit down because you're on the list too. Go ahead, one of you.
Sure. Good morning, Chair Kenny Geyer, Vice Chair Olson, Vice Chair Sanchez, and members of the committee. My name is Jenny Lee, and I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Housing Alliance in support of House Bill 2006. The Housing Alliance believes that every Oregonian should have the opportunity to thrive in a safe and stable home, and our state's policies should reflect this fundamental value. Oregonians across the state are struggling more than ever to afford housing. Last year, more than 21,000 school children experienced homelessness, a record number. Communities throughout Oregon face a dramatic shortage of housing that is affordable to people with low and even moderate incomes. Meanwhile, rising home prices and heavy competition are pushing homeownership out of reach for many of those renting. The mortgage interest deduction in its current form means that our state is spending resources in a way that does not help address any of these urgent housing needs. Today, we have an opportunity to recalibrate the structure of this deduction to continue helping those with moderate incomes while redirecting our expenditures to focus more on people who need help affording a home. HB 2006 is a balanced proposal that would result in funds that could be spent on proven strategies like affordable homeownership programs, emergency rent assistance, and the development of new affordable housing. Homeownership brings many opportunities and stability to families. We believe that the most effective way to help more Oregonians become homeowners is through targeted programs such as down payment assistance and the development of new affordable for sale units. In the midst of an unprecedented housing crisis, we have an important opportunity to make our housing policy more equitable and then use these resources to meet urgent housing needs. We strongly encourage you to vote yes on HB 2006. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm Rebecca Gladstone, representing the League of Women Voters of Oregon.
Put the mic a little bit closer to you.
Oh, that's
a little. Not
often
too close.
A problem, just the other direction.
Yeah.
Thank you. The League.
It's perfect.
The League believes the state's tax system should be equitable and flexible enough to adjust to social and economic changes. Are you getting that feedback?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Furthermore, state and local tax structures should be examined and revised to benefit communities so that provide housing for lower-income families. The League supports rebalancing the mortgage interest deduction so that it will assist more Oregonians in need of safe and stable housing. The mortgage interest deduction currently is structured in a way that overwhelmingly benefits the wealthiest Oregonians. The current deduction provides over $1 billion in tax relief, but a substantial portion subsidizes households in the top 40%. At the same time, communities throughout Oregon are experiencing a housing crisis. As a state, we need to evaluate carefully every available housing subsidy in order to ensure that we're doing all we can to meet the overwhelming need. By modifying the deduction, resources can be redirected to the development of affordable rental homes, supportive services to prevent homelessness, and affordable homeownership. The League is particularly concerned about our most vulnerable community members and supports spending a portion of the savings on rental housing for extremely low-income households and homelessness prevention. Thank you for hearing our testimony, and I would add that it was inadvertently added twice. You don't need to call us again. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Kenny Geyer, members of the committee. My name is Jess Larson. I'm the director of the Welcome Home Coalition, where we advocate for safe, permanent, and affordable homes for community members in the Portland metro region. But if I might, today I'd like to share a bit of my personal story. As a child, my mother raised my sisters and I as a single parent with only the assistance of state welfare at the time, food stamps, and child support. And we grew up in a a home that was funded, financed, made possible through a HUD program where my mom's mortgage payment every month was $150, what she could afford. I grew up in that home from ages 10 until when I graduated and left for college, as did all of my sisters. And in fact, my mother went on to get her degree as a post-secondary student. And now my sisters and I are all raising our own families. We are all homeowners. We are all participating in the economy and in our communities successfully because we had that safe, stable, permanent home to start out from and grow up in and set off into life with. But said very simply, if I was growing up today in my family in Oregon, I would not have this opportunity. I would not have been on an educational path to college education and to be sitting here before you today, because my family would be scrambling to find a safe place, a roof over our heads. While the mortgage interest deduction is a benefit that we provide to every homeowner with a mortgage at any income, families with low incomes in our state who need affordable housing supports are served only one family for every four who qualify. The other three families, families like mine, fend for themselves and try to figure out how to get by, how to grow up, how to find a way in this world when rents are out of reach and homeownership is even more out of reach. So as you're hearing in testimony today, and in, I'm sure through a submitted testimony that HB 2006 presents an attack on homeownership, I ask, an attack on whose home ownership. And I ask you to do the same, because I believe homeownership has long ago been attacked for low-income families like the one I grew up in, and we need to make sure that more families have this opportunity. And I encourage your political courage and leadership to fight for this opportunity for Oregonians who need our support most. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, next up we have Bradley Twist, Donna Cohen, and Peter Hanley. Donna Cohen and Peter Hanley.
Hello, everybody. I timed this, by the way. So my name is Donna Cohen. I live in the St. John's community of Portland, and I support this bill. 13 years ago, it was an affordable housing program that allowed me in late adulthood to finally buy a home by providing down payment assistance and a 10-year property tax abatement. My stable, financially secure home has allowed me to engage in personal and civic activities which have improved my life and the life of my community. I spent 2 years working on a transportation problem that literally split my community in half. A major neighborhood street carried 500 freight trucks a day, including going around a blind curve and above which 1,000 kids lived. The roadway also had very few crossing features.
Can you push the mic a teeny bit away from you?
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, good. Thanks for mentioning. Very few crossing features, and the result of 2 years I spent with neighbors in talks with the city of Portland will be an overhaul of the street to make it pedestrian friendly. We've already gotten the freight trucks off. After that project, I spent the next 2 years working to make sure the remodel of our neighborhood high school included adequate STEM project space. These two projects would not have had nearly as much success were it not for my unique contributions. That's not my ego speaking. It's my neighbors speaking, actually. In short, my presence in the community helped to make it safer and stronger. In addition, my house motivated a radical change in my health. At the beginning, I was in poor physical condition, but having the house gave me a reason to become stronger. It's hard to do gardening and home repair and maintenance, which I like to do and save money by doing, when one has little endurance or strength. If I did not have this little house, I honestly don't know what I would do. I'd be in a very, very vulnerable position. I want to thank the state and the city of Portland for creating this program that made a huge difference in my life. And one last sentence. I would be happy to give up my mortgage interest deduction if it helped other people who would not otherwise be able to buy a home or rent an apartment to do so through this bill.
Thank you very much.
Chair Kenny Geyer, members of the committee. My name is Bradley Twist. I am a real estate broker, a property manager, and a landlord in Portland. I have the unique position of working with folks every day in various capacities of housing, and it's because of that experience that I'm here today as a real estate professional asking you to support HB 2006. I want to be clear that I think the mortgage interest deduction is super important to homeownership, and that's why I stress that this is a modification and by no means an elimination of this really important housing subsidy. The problem is that Portland and many parts of our state are in a serious housing crisis. So, you know, we're talking about a serious issue, much more than just declining homeownership. We're talking about total housing insecurity and families that don't even have roofs over their heads. So when we acknowledge that our state is facing such a serious shortage of affordable housing, it only seems logical that we would examine our state's largest housing subsidy and who that's really benefiting. And when, upon that examination, we find that it's mostly benefiting wealthy individuals, what's our next steps? I come to you today fully understanding that I am largely on the other side of my industry on this issue. I've watched over the last 24 hours my inbox fill with emails about how homeownership is under attack, which I think is really miscommunicating the issue. You know, various trade associations that I am a member of will say that any modification to the mortgage interest deduction will harm Oregonians, but I'm here to implore you to dig deeper on the issue and really examine it and see the positive impact that this modification could have. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Peter Hanley is not here, it looks like. So Peter DiMatteo, Amanda Saul, and Shannon, I can never say your last name, Villa.
Bill Hauer. Mm-hmm. Hi, Representative Kenny Geyer and committee. Thank you for having me. I'm Amanda Saul, and I'm here representing Enterprise Community Partners. Enterprise is a national nonprofit that provides financing and housing support to organizations that build and own affordable housing. We've invested over $1.2 billion in Oregon and Washington in the last 20 years. Enterprise strongly supports mortgage interest deduction reform at the state and federal levels. We support House Bill 2006 and its common sense reforms to Oregon's largest housing subsidy. We are in a statewide housing crisis, and our Oregon's largest housing program spends over $1 billion subsidizing homeownership, mostly for well-off Oregonians. It has been proven that this is not an effective policy tool to increase homeownership, which is what it was originally intended to do. By making this important resource more equitable, as proposed in House Bill 2006, we will be able to increase resources for homeownership, permanent supportive rental housing, and housing and homelessness prevention services. We know how to end homelessness and increase housing stability. It's by building more affordable homes. In the Portland metro area alone, we are 63,000 units short for people living at or below 50% of median family income. By rebalancing the mortgage interest deduction, we can help to solve this problem. I believe in this work both personally and professionally, and I just think it's very important that we make sure that we have an equitable tax system that benefits the people who need it the most. And I urge you to support this bill. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Kenny Geyer, Vice Chair Sanchez, and members of the committee. My name is Shannon Billhauer. I'm the Executive Director of Habitat for Humanity of Oregon. It has been exciting to get to know this bill and work on it with our partners. Oregon Center for Public Policy and the Oregon Opportunity Network have provided great leadership in bringing us together to understand, really dig into and get to know how our statewide mortgage interest deduction works. I would love to state for the record that Habitat for Humanity affiliates across our state love realtors. They serve on all of our boards of directors. They have sponsored many of the homes that we've built and are just phenomenal, engaged community members in my personal experience. I also know, because of working with Habitat for Humanity for a long time now, that we live in a very philanthropic state, that there are many high-income earners who give personally of their own wealth to help
their friends and neighbors have a stable, safe place to live where kids can achieve what their education and families can realize real stability economically and really plant roots and become part of a community. In my estimation, the spirit of this bill is in keeping with that trend of Oregon philanthropy and investment in making our communities livable for everyone there. That is why I'm so excited about this bill, because all of us who've been working on home ownership, quite honestly, the state of Oregon has actually almost not at all invested today in any affordable homeownership development yet. Of course, we have opportunities to do so now, to have some revenue available in this tough climate, or some savings of redirection of the mortgage interest deduction is just huge. So 50% of the savings would go towards home ownership, 25% to meeting emergency housing needs, and 25% to stable, affordable rental housing preservation and development. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Kenny Geyer, representatives. My name is David DiMatteo from Latino Network, a culturally specific nonprofit organization focusing on educational equity and direct wraparound services, including home retention, energy, and rental assistance. I'm here to speak in favor of House Bill 2006 because currently my office is filled with families struggling in the face of dramatically increasing rents and a troubling shortage of affordable housing units. To give you a couple of examples, in the Cully neighborhood, 18 families in the Normandy Apartments, my neighbors, have recently had their rent increased by 100%. 72 households, including 59 children, at Titan Manor Apartments are in a similar position. And these are overwhelmingly people of color, hardworking families with children, and they're going to be displaced from their homes, from their neighborhoods. Their children will be displaced from their schools because of a serious shortage of affordable homes and supportive services. House Bill 2006 will provide desperately needed funds to increase emergency assistance, affordable housing, and homeownership to our state's most vulnerable community members. From my perspective, from the perspective of these families and the children, this is a racial equity issue, it is a moral issue, and for some of our most vulnerable community members, it is actually a survival issue. I don't mean to sound dramatic about this, but the reality on the ground is that lives are being destroyed, and we have an opportunity to do something about it. We have an opportunity to help. I urge you all to vote yes on HB 2006.
Thank you. Okay, it looks like our last panel, Jody Weiser, Daniel Hauser, and Marcia Kelly. The two people that we had called who have not come up before, Annie Rose Shapiro and Britt Conroy. Okay. So we'll have one panel after this of maybe one person or maybe two. Go ahead. Okay. Jody
Weiser, speaking for Tax Fairness Oregon, Chair and members of the committee. We strongly support this bill because of where the money goes and the shift in who is affected. I'm going to make my testimony really short because I need to be in another room right now. But I will say that the most this bill will cost anybody is $3,600, and those will be families with $1 million house and income over $200,000. Those people can find that $3,600 way easier than the people at the bottom end of the scale can find a down payment. And they can do it year after year. And the chart that you were shown earlier that showed that some low-income people will be affected, that would be me some years, because my income, many years, I pay zero in taxes. And then the next year, I might pay $80,000 in taxes. Well, in the $80,000 year, I would be thrown off. And in the zero year, my interest deduction would still be allowed. So don't think that just because you see that some low-income people are going to be affected, it means really people who don't have capacity, because it doesn't mean that. It means that people who have capacity often have incomes that jump all over the place. I want to remind you that the federal deduction will still be available. That's more powerful than the state deduction because of the difference in income tax rates. We have $1.9 billion worth of subsidy for home ownership in this state between the mortgage interest deduction, the property tax deduction, and the capital gains deduction when you sell your house. $1.9 billion. We're really not asking for a lot of that to be shifted from people who own a home to people who need a home. And that's really the difference. And we're also shifting who is building assets. If you most people's primary asset is their home. And if you never get one, you don't get that start. You don't build that asset base. Many of us probably had families who helped us buy our first home, and we've been advantaged enough to help our children buy our first home. We're just asking that those kind of benefits be passed to people who don't have the advantages that the people who own houses worth $1 million or second homes or have high incomes have. Thank you.
Chair Kenny Geyer, Vice Chair Olson, Vice Chair Sanchez, and members of the committee. My name is Marcia Kelly, and I'm the public policy advocate for the Oregon Women's Rights Coalition. We stand in support of House Bill 2006. I was amazed at a young woman on a panel testifying about her family's ability to make it through to education because they had stable housing. And I noted that she said that they had been on public assistance. So I want to bring a little bit of comparison of what the $15,000 limit on interest deduction is compared to the temporary assistance to needy families that you heard in this committee a couple of days ago, and a request that if possible, could we increase the amount? The amount for a family of three on TANF is $506 a month. So that would mean over a year, they have about 40% of what someone could claim in a interest deduction on their taxes. That's pretty outstanding. And that would mean that every dollar of that 506 would go toward housing, and it would only be 40% of what the limit is on what people could deduct under this bill. At a bare minimum, it's really crazy to have the second home deduction when people are really struggling. So I urge your support of this bill.
Chair Kenny Geyer, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify. I'm going to keep this exceptionally brief in the interest of time and just ask that you please look at the letter submitted to the committee.
Your name for the record.
All right, thank you.
Your name for the record.
My name is Daniel Hauser, and I'm with the Oregon Center for Public Policy as well.
Okay.
That would make it much easier, I think, to find my testimony. for clarifying that.
Did you want to say anything about the testimony at all? 30 seconds.
Yeah, what it was is it is the actual letter that was signed by 24 economists arguing, I think, very clearly that this is not that the mortgage interest deduction is not something that effectively improves homeownership rates in comparisons between countries, between states, as we've heard earlier. When we really look at the peer-reviewed research, what we find is that there's no evidence that this helps people afford homes. And that's all I have to add. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Okay, so the last people coming up, Erica Calderon and Octaviano Mujeres. Anyone else there? No. Okay, great.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Erica Calderon, and I am the Homeownership Program Manager for Hacienda CDC in Multnomah County. I've heard a lot of testimony today, and I want to be here and represent the my staff that I have back that are working hard right now, that are currently working with the 10 homeowners that are in contract and 10 more that are out shopping that have come into our office in the last 2 weeks. In the last year and a half, we have seen an uprise in how many people are fearful of being pushed out of the rental market and are looking at the opportunity of coming of just purchasing a home to stabilize that monthly payment every month. I've looked at the bill. The bill is excellent. We're in support of HB 2006. And I just want to remind everybody here something interesting that I heard recently in the governor's office that I did not know, I was not aware of. Oregon has a population of over 500,000 Latinos currently living in our state. A little bit about what our culture is and who we are is we don't look to rent, we look to own. And that is important to our community. And right now, the funds that would be able to be put aside through this bill to help more and more counselors and some of my colleagues that are in the room be able to push that education to break the barrier that is difficult for them right now to understand the financial system, those funds would come and we'd be able to better equip ourselves and reach our community and help them through that struggle into becoming homeowners. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Connie Geyer, members of the committee, thank you so much for providing this opportunity. My name is Octaviano Merecias. I'm the Policy and Civic Engagement Manager at Latino Network. I'm also a board member for Adelante Mujeres, a nonprofit based in Forest Grove, Oregon. They serve Washington County. I have lived in Oregon for about 18 years. I have slept in a living room with my whole family in Cornelius, Oregon, Washington County. I have lived in an apartment complex in Benton and Linn County. I have lived in an apartment complex in Washington and Marion County and Multnomah County. I know how difficult it is to find places, affordable places to live right now. I live now in Multnomah County, as you know. That's the difficulty. I had leaving my car after 2008, after I finished with the master's degree and so on, and it was the crash, the economy crash. So I know from a personal experience how difficult it is to navigate this. I'm in support of House Bill 2006 because as thousands of families across the state are looking at you and are looking at us who are working together, who are listening to these stories every day, what are we doing about it? I come here to share part of my story, but also because there are many people that reached out to me yesterday and this morning and said, go out there and say something. So I drove as fast as I could. I got here a little bit late, but that's because 217 and I-5, and you know how traffic is out there.
Yes.
Thank you very much for providing the opportunity. Muchísimas gracias.
Thank you so much. All right. With that, we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2006 and the Committee on Human Services and Housing 6 and the Committee on Human Services and Housing on House Bill 2006.